This is provided by freeconferencing.com.
There are two participants in this conference. This conference is being recorded. Muted.
Good afternoon, folks, and welcome. It's time to break free. I will be your host for the hour, David Matthew Rock, coming to you live from the constitutional carry state of Arizona via the Patriot broadcast from the trenches, 89.5 FM, Chiloquin, the state of Jefferson. Simulcast on IndianaFreedomTalkRadio.com, the Grow Your Own channel, 107.5 FM, Greenville, South Carolina. Jalapenos Channel, 87.9 FM, Sioux Falls, South Dakota, and many more micro-broadcasts and webcasts heard around the world. Take the time to check out the number one source for Patriot news on the web at FromTheTrenchesWorldReport.com. If you'd like to contact me via email, I can be reached at DavidMatthewRock@gmail.com. This is a live call-in program. Come on up and share your thoughts and experiences. Unlike the mainstream media, listener participation is appreciated. The call-in number is 641-715-3610. Once connected, you'll be asked for the conference room number, which is 220029, the pound sign. Hit star 6 to unmute. All right. Having a little bit of technical difficulties here. Let me see if I can get my call-in line reloaded. I can't seem to unmute. Okay, so today, actually, yesterday, Gaylene posted a video on FromTheTrenchesWorldReport.com titled Ernst Zundel Warns Jews About Doing to America What They Did to Germany. Gaylene also commented, please God, let at least 10% of the 7.5 billion see the last 31 seconds of this vid. It turns out Ernst Zundel, the author of Did 6 Million Really Die, passed away last Saturday in his German family home. Searching news articles about his death yielded appalling results full of character assassination and discreditation tactics that many of you will find familiar. We will get into it as soon as we return from these messages from our sponsors.
In the United States, there are enough guns out on the street and enough lawlessness in the public and a revolutionary spirit that founded that republic. This is not Germany, where the only people that had guns were hunters and soldiers and policemen. The United States is armed to the teeth. They have a spirit of revolution in their blood. They are heroes.
Provided by friends. Thank you.
You've heard the phrase, you are what you eat? Not true. Actually, you are what you can absorb. So if the vitamins and supplements you now take are not being absorbed, what good are they? Introducing Protovite, a proprietary liquid system that allows premium quality nutrients to positively affect the blood in an astonishing 5 minutes. Watch our amazing 2-minute live blood cell video at TrueNutritionNow.com. That's TrueNutritionNow.com. Then call 520-829-1133. Protovite is nutrition you can feel. Protovite is nutrition that gets in.
Hey, old Dr. Bones here. Are you prepared to deal with medical issues in a disaster situation? What would you do if medical help was not on the way? The Doom and Bloom Survival Medicine Handbook is over 400 pages of how-to advice written in plain English. You'll learn to handle all the likely medical issues you'll encounter in times of trouble. And it's not just the conventional medical wisdom. We talk about alternatives like essential oils, medicinal herbs, and other home remedies. Make the Doom and Bloom Survival Medicine Handbook a part of your survival library. And don't forget, Nurse Amy and I have medical kits, suture materials, instructional DVDs, and other items that'll help you keep it together even if things fall apart. Check them out, as well as 200 articles on medical preparedness, survival gardening, and other alternative remedies on our website at www.doomandbloom.net. Never think doom and gloom, think doom and bloom.
Divergent Flavor Labs introduces our all-original e-juice flavor line made from pure 100% kosher USP food-grade ingredients. Whether it's our flavored tobaccos like Calypso or our amazing bakery flavors like Creme de Liumptious, Divergent Flavor Labs' handmade all-original flavor line will never disappoint. Available exclusively through VaporRebellion.com.
Thank you for listening to PBFTT.
Patriot Broadcast from the Trenches, 89.5.
Micro FM.
Chiloquin, the state of Jefferson.
All right, folks, so I'm experiencing a few little technical difficulties here. If you can hear me on the call-in line, go ahead and unmute and come on up. Just having some connection issues. I'm actually not seeing the unmute button available for the call-in line after I reloaded the... well, it is what it is. But anyway, at any point, if you can hear me, feel free to come and interrupt. Okay, so when I went looking into Ernst Zundel passing away, I found a whole bunch of hit piece articles coming from Canada, coming from New York, coming from all over the place. One of the ones that kind of caught my attention pointed out the fact that he was tried for fake news. So let's get into that. This was posted at FromTheTrenchesWorldReport.com for discussion by me today. It's coming from the New York Times, and it's titled, Ernst Zundel, Holocaust Denier, Tried for Spreading His Message, Dies at 78. Ernst Zundel, who from a ramshackle Victorian house in central Toronto churned out books, posters, audio tapes, and memorabilia denying the Holocaust and spreading neo-Nazi messages worldwide, died on Saturday at his home in Germany. He was 78. Ramshackle Victorian house. Does that sound familiar? Ramshackle farmhouse, like when they talk about Mark Kornke? Anyway, the death was confirmed by Marina Lawman, an official in the town. No cause was provided. Although when I looked in a couple different articles, they said he had a heart attack. Mr. Zundel was convicted twice in 1985 and 1998 under a rarely invoked law criminalizing the knowing publication of false news that caused or was likely to cause harm to the public interest, which the authorities interpreted to include Canada's commitment to tolerance. So did you catch that, folks? So we got somebody, let's see, where the hell did it say it? Criminalized, false news, okay? So we can see evidence of the fake news agenda going all the way back to 1985. So there's like absolutely nothing new about the enemy's tactics. And before we finish this hit piece from the New York Times, we're actually going to take a trip back to 1985, and we're going to listen to Ernst Zundel's CNN interview on Crossfire with Tom Braden and Robert Novak. So let's get it going here.
In the Crossfire from Toronto, Ernst Zundel, publisher of Did 6 Million Really Die?
Good evening. Welcome to Crossfire. There is in this world a particularly virulent form of anti-Semitism which holds that the Holocaust, that is, the systematic extermination by Nazi Germany of some 5 million or more Jews, never took place. That the horror and the history is a fiction promoted by the Jewish people. It's a little like an argument with the Flat Earth Society, but some people believe in a flat earth, and our guest on Crossfire tonight has just been convicted in a Canadian court for saying that the Holocaust never happened. Now, in the United States, Ernst Zundel would be viewed as holding erroneous but perfectly legal opinions. In Canada, he will probably go to jail. Let's talk to him first. Bob?
Mr. Zundel, I think there's something that I wonder, and I think a lot of our viewers wonder. Just what is your motive? What are you after? What are you trying to do?
I'm a German. I was born in Germany, and I take the view that we Germans have been getting a raw deal in the, especially the North American media, about our particular history for the period between 1933 and 1945. It might be erroneous to North Americans. It is what we believe are the facts. And that's our side that I wanted to tell.
And are you an admirer of the Hitler regime which ruled Germany in that period?
I admire Adolf Hitler, the political leader, yes.
Do you think his policy toward the Jews was desirable?
Well, you know, every government in the world at the time recognized him as the legitimate leader of the legitimate government in West.
No, I didn't ask you that question, Mr. Zundel. I asked you whether you thought his policy toward the Jews in that period was desirable.
No, I don't think it was, right?
Do you consider yourself an anti-Semitic?
No, I don't.
Do you hate Jews?
I don't.
Do you think there is a Jewish conspiracy in the world?
No, I don't think so, no.
Well, who made up this story then, Mr. Zundel?
What story?
Of over 5 million Jews being killed. Is that what you just seem to deny?
I think it was a tool used during the Second World War by the powers that were involved in a war against Germany. There is considerable evidence to that effect, that it was a World War II propaganda device. Once Germany lost the war, the lie, or the propaganda lie, or the atrocity propaganda persisted, and nobody was there to challenge it with facts.
Well, Mr. Zundel, let me challenge it a minute. It distresses me to hear you talk the way you do, or to see what you said, read what you said. I happened to have the onerous duty of going into Buchenwald right after the surrender of Germany. I saw the camp. I saw some of the survivors. I saw the ovens. So I don't really understand how, 40 years later? I am sitting here talking with a guy who says it didn't happen?
Well,
I mean, how can you say something like
that? Let's analyze your nice homily and take it segment by segment. You were an American serviceman. You went into a German concentration camp or internment camp, and you saw the bodies, you said, and you saw the prisoners in there, and you saw the ovens. Every German city of note, every European city of note, every Canadian city of note has ovens. That's crematoriums. That's not under dispute. That there were prisoners in there, that's not under dispute. That they were skinny at the end of the war, that's also not under dispute. What is under dispute is whether there was a policy of planned genocide by a government body. That's what the issue is.
Let me just get this clear. I think you have no moral right to do what you're doing, but if in the United States you'd have a legal right, and I wish that Canada had a similar freedom of the press.
I agree with you there. I wish so too.
But let me point out to you that in the Nuremberg trials, in documentation since World War II from people who were in concentration camps, like Elie Wiesel, like people who live in this town, the head of American law, the American University Law School, those people were in the camps. They saw these things. And let me remind you that the German army, the German leaders at Nuremberg, did not deny the allegations that they murdered Jews in these camps?
Well, let me put it this way. I am permitted to talk to you in my present situation about Nuremberg. I am not permitted to talk to you about the Holocaust per se under judge's orders. So I want to talk to you about Nuremberg. I think I'm quite safe there. We know from our research, and that came out during my trial.
Who are we, Mr. Zundel?
Well, these are my defense team, and certainly all the newspaper people and so on that attended the court, because we introduced that into evidence that in Nuremberg, in the record, for instance, things were expunged from the record. So how do we know today what was expunged from the record? In other words, Justice Jackson had, for instance, one reference to torture by one of the most famous of the Nuremberg accused expunged from the record.
Mr. Zundel, I feel really in many ways we're doing a disservice to have you on the air. I think it is a loathsome situation where anybody gets, and that's what's wrong with the Canadian law, that they have made you a front page figure. But I still am quite interested on where you're coming from. How old were you in 1945, sir?
I was 6 years old.
And when did you decide that this was all a smear against Germany?
After I was able to get some factual information in North American libraries. You see, in Germany...
What's your education, Mr. Zundel?
My educational background is that of any two-legged Homo sapien.
What's your education?
Pardon?
How educated are you? Are you a researcher?
I took a number of years of political science, and I publish... I'm the author of some 12 books and booklets. I publish an internationally circulated newsletter.
But you have no particular degree and no particular expertise.
Christ didn't have a degree in Christianity. Marx didn't have a degree in Marxism.
Wait just a minute
and
now. We're not going to compare you with Christ. I'll do it with Adolf Hitler, but not with Christ.
Mr. Sandel, why don't you live in Germany? Can you tell us that? You express this love for Germany so much.
Well, hold your horses here. I'm debating a political issue. What difference does it make in the world in 1985 whether I live in Tel Aviv, Johannesburg, or Toronto?
I mean, you are sitting here, you say, I just love Germany, but you live in Canada.
I think that's, to me, a rather sophomoric high school type argument.
No, I'm
almost
asking you the question. I'm not arguing. Why don't you live in Germany?
I might just do that one of these days, but I'm for the moment
happy here. I don't think
they want
to tell you the truth.
It's possible too.
Bob, I think, Mr. Zundel, is it not true that you've had some dealings, some pretty close dealings with the leader of the German neo-Nazi movement at the moment, on whom was the police raided the other day, and they found a lot of anti-Semitic literature and some guns and bombs?
But when you say...
I'm talking about Manfred Roeder.
Manfred Roeder has been behind bars for the last 2 years, so I don't think that they were raiding his place or somebody else's place rather recently about his writings.
Before he went to jail.
Right. Well, he was a German attorney that published an international newsletter. I do too. He has published some material about me. That's about the extent to which I know him.
Mr. Zundel, do you think that the people who know govern Germany are patriotic Germans?
I think they're a bunch of despicable quislings that were appointed in West Germany on the back of American bayonets and tanks, and in East Germany on the back of Soviet tanks.
Germany, that was 40 years ago, sir. There's been several elections. There's been parties.
Well, there were
power.
Elections.
Surely you don't call these people who are in power now quislings.
There were sham elections in West Germany, just like they haven't been in East Germany. After all, the East German dictatorship, communist dictatorship, is called the German Democratic Republic. They have got a parliament. They have got in their constitution freedom of the press.
I just want to talk to you about West Germany. You say that's not a democracy?
It's a dictatorship.
Oh, it's a dictatorship.
It's an oligarchy appointed by the American
occupying
government.
The people ruling Germany were appointed. Billy Brandt was appointed by the Americans.
I'm glad that you mentioned Willy Brandt, of all people. He came to Germany in 1945.
This service is provided by freeconferencing.com.
You are the only participant in this conference.
In the Norwegian...
The mayor.
Okay, well, elected by whom? Under what laws, drafted by whom? Well, Willy Brandt came to Germany in 1945 wearing an American officer's uniform. I have photographs where he attends the Nuremberg proceedings.
You would like to see a Nazi revival in Germany, would you not?
Not really.
Let's be honest.
Most of the Germans of today couldn't fit, number one, get their uniform jackets tied, and they would trip over their own feet marching down with their
beautiful... What is that hat you're wearing? What does that signify?
This is my good luck charm. You see, when I appeared in my first court appearance, I was knocked down, assaulted from behind and knocked down. The second time I was hit over the head by demonstrator sticks, and that was just shortly before a bomb went off at my house. All this because I hold this rather unusual view on history, you know. So I would say that the opponents of my viewpoint are the ones that are intolerant and violent.
All right.
I'm a man of debate, peace, and democracy.
Let me get you back for one second to the history of this thing. General Petrenko, I think his name was the Russian general who captured Auschwitz, and he has testified that the Holocaust did take place because he and his troops moved in there.
Yeah, well,
how do you account for the fact?
The Soviets also.
Wait a minute, let me finish. Yes, how do you account for the fact that the United States and the Russians, General Eisenhower and General Petrenko, both say the same thing, even though, as you know, the United States and the Russians are not in very friendly terms.
And the German government, the West German government, and the East German government both say the same thing.
Well, isn't that a coincidence? That exactly tends
to
prove my point
of
view. If there was a self-respecting government in West Germany, you wouldn't get all this cozy agreement. As a matter of fact, the West German government leaders were hurt that they were not allowed by the Americans and all the other allies to help celebrate the kind of invasion of Europe by the American armed forces. But I'd like to come back to your glorious ally, Soviet General Petrenko. He's the same fellow that tried to blame the murder of the Polish elite, the officer corps in Katyn, on the Germans. And when the Germans proved that they had the goods on the America's erstwhile democratic ally, Uncle Joe's troops, suddenly, quietly, the charge was dropped.
So you can't believe a word he says. Well, all right, we'll come
back to that.
Anything
the Soviets say, I would take with a grain of salt.
Mr. Zendel, I'm sorry. We have to take a break. We're coming right back to talk to the man who is under sentence, or will be under sentence shortly, in a Canadian court for having told what the Canadian law says is a lie harmful to the public interest, in this instance, tolerance. We'll be right back.
Crossfire with Ernst Zendel, man who wrote a pamphlet claiming the Holocaust didn't take place, was tried and convicted in the Canadian court, sentenced to 2 years, and is now appealing. Mr. Zendel, did anybody ever hear of you? Did you have any kind of contact with any kind of mass opinion before you were arrested by the Canadian authorities?
Well, number one, I wasn't arrested. Number two, I have a worldwide audience. I do approximately 150 interview shows of this type a year. My voice and my opinions have been heard annually by at least 300 million people around the world.
Well, let me ask you the same question this way. Isn't it a godsend for you in delivering this claptrap you're putting out that the Canadian authorities tried you? Because I would have never heard of you if it hadn't been for this trial.
Well, you see, that might be true, but the thing is, as a citizen charged with an offense, I had to appear in court.
But that put into your hands, did it not?
Well, if I turned a bad situation, which cost me about $100,000 to defend myself, into a positive kind of jiu-jitsu in the political sense, then I think that's not only my right.
You were delighted to be in court, weren't you?
Well, I'm an advocate of free speech. More than my opponents who are charging me with fascism and all this stuff,
I basically
love freedom of speech, and I think it was a travesty of justice to put a writer and a publisher into court for publishing some, let's say, an alternate opinion or
now
a dissident viewpoint.
You're a great admirer of Hitler. You told me what a fine man he was. There was no freedom of speech whatsoever in Nazi Germany, was there?
Well, that's your opinion.
No, I'm asking you a question.
There was lots of freedom of opinion in West Germany. I've read lots of books.
We've almost really had enough of this, Mr. Zendel. We have history. We have eyewitnesses. We have archives. The Germans, are a very
you
methodical
have one side.
People.
Let me you have one side
the
of
German,
history.
The German army left behind it maps and designs and order blanks and Zyklon B gas
for,
and
you
when
mean
it
for
came
banning
into
freedom
the
of
camp
speech.
And when it left. It's all documented, and here you are, 40 years later, giving us this stuff, and you know, I say, it's okay for you to hold an error, at least it would be in this country,
error.
But you really ought to try to get yourself educated. What do you say to the fact that Robert Wolf, over at the National Archives, right here in Washington, D.C., has has models and orders and designs for those gas chambers which were taken from the German archives.
Well, let me see here. Researchers have combed the National Archives for me in Washington, D.C. All they came up with for my trial was a documentary, which didn't agree. The transcript didn't agree with the film that we were seeing.
Mr. Sindel, you know, when you're trying to make this argument, which some unsuspecting people might think has some validity, don't you know, when you say that there was free speech in Germany, when there's records of journalists, of authors going into concentration camps, don't you know you to discredit your whole argument? I mean, aren't you smart enough to know that?
We are not here to run for a political popularity contest.
I'm not talking about popularity. Don't you know that just absolutely discredits your whole argument when you say there was free speech? There were no liberties of any kind.
There were tens of thousands of journalists writing in Germany during the Third Reich and the Second World War.
Well, that's
I have
nonsense.
Read many
there
of the
were,
books.
Have you read those newspapers? They were
of
all
course I have.
Censored.
They
were the party line. There was no criticism.
Look, in the United States, you had very strict censorship.
Oh, that
in
is nonsense.
Canada, we had very strict censorship.
That's nonsense. There was criticism of the regime through
Mr.
the whole.
Mendel.
You see, the thing that I resent about this whole business is that I end up arguing with this loony. And it is just absolutely despicable.
Look,
Mr. Sindel, I'd like you to explain to me, why it was. You said the Jews foisted this propaganda about the Holocaust. How is it that the Jews are so powerful that they can get Russians and Germans and French and Americans and British all to agree on the details of the Holocaust?
Okay, just let me answer this way. Number one, I didn't say what you said I said. And number two, I don't think that this short program would give me the scope to try to explain it.
Well, you said that it was all propaganda, and that it was, you said earlier on, that it was all propaganda, and that it was begun during the war and continued thereafter. I suppose you mean it was Jewish propaganda.
Well, you said that. I didn't say that. What I'm saying is that World War II propaganda is around us today, posing as history, all that I was trying to do, and hope that my human rights in the world and democratic rights and privileges.
All right, one more question. You were six. You were six at the time.
Okay.
There were people in those camps. There were people in those camps who were a little older, and some of whom escaped, like Mr. Wiesel. He wrote a book called Night, which is a marvelous documentary of a concentration camp. Do you think he just made this all up?
Well, during my trial, I had an expert witness come to this court case in Toronto, and he said, and he was a German fellow under oath, he was there as an official for a whole year, and he said that these things were not true. So whom am I to believe?
Mr. Sindel, you were talking about a citizen's rights. You're not a citizen of Canada, are you?
I'm a citizen of the world. I have got, according to the United Nations, to hold it to the United Nations Human Rights Charter, I have got the right to inform myself, and I have got a God-given right and a natural right. Canadian politician, no Canadian parliament needs to give me any rights. I take the right to express my opinion.
Did you get a fair trial?
Pardon me?
Did you get a fair trial?
No, I did not.
Why?
Because half of the evidence was not allowed, since, of course, I was German. Many of my documents were Germans. We were not allowed to show.
Because they were nonsense, that's why.
Hold it for a minute. We were going to introduce over 200 slides taken by experts and a person that investigated these camps. We were not allowed to show those slides. We were not even allowed to show American Air Force overflights, meaning aerial photographs of the camps in 1944 and 45. This deprived me of an adequate defense, and of course we will appeal.
Mr. Sindel, have you ever been under psychiatric care? I'm curious.
Actually, I had a psychiatrist who was one of my best witnesses for the defense, and he was a guest in my home. I didn't see that he was fleeing out of my house.
Well, you don't quite answer the question, but that's all right.
I'll answer directly. No, I have no history of mental illness, and don't propose to develop one tonight on this program.
One more question. Do you expect to serve 2 years in jail?
I think so. It is a political trial, and the way the judge looks at my viewpoint, it could be that I'll be going up the tube for 2 years.
Okay, Mr. Sindel, thank you very much for being our guest on Crossfire.
Okay, so that was Ernst Sindel's CNN interview on Crossfire with Tom Braden and Robert Novak. We're a little pressed for time here, and we're going to have to move to our bottom of the hour break.
The phrase, you are what you eat? Not true. Actually, you are what you can absorb. So if the vitamins and supplements you now take are not being absorbed, what good are they? Introducing Protovite, a proprietary liquid system that allows premium quality nutrients to positively affect the blood in an astonishing 5 minutes. Watch our amazing 2-minute live blood cell video at TrueNutritionNow.com. That's TrueNutritionNow.com. Then call 520-829-1133. Protovite is nutrition you can feel. Protovite is nutrition that gets in.
Hey, old Dr. Bones here. Are you prepared to deal with medical issues in a disastrous situation? What would you do if medical help was not on the way? The Doom and Bloom Survival Medicine Handbook is over 400 pages of how-to advice written in plain English. You'll learn to handle all the likely medical issues you'll encounter in times of trouble. And it's not just the conventional medical wisdom. We talk about alternatives like essential oils, medicinal herbs, and other home remedies. Make the Doom and Bloom Survival Medicine Handbook a part of your survival library. And don't forget, Nurse Amy and I have medical kits, suture materials, instructional DVDs, and other items that'll help you keep it together even if things fall apart. Check them out, as well as 200 articles on medical preparedness, survival gardening, and other alternative remedies on our website at www.doomandbloom.net. Never think doom and gloom, think doom and bloom.
Divergent Flavor Labs introduces our all-original e-juice flavor line made from pure 100% kosher USP food-grade ingredients. Whether it's our flavored tobaccos like Calypso or our amazing bakery flavors like Crumbiliumptious, Divergent Flavor Labs' handmade all-original flavor line will never disappoint. Available exclusively through VaporsRebellion.com.
Thank you for listening to PBFTT.
Patriot Broadcast from the Trenches, 89.5
Micro FM,
Chiloquin, the state of Jefferson.
service is provided by FreeConferencing.com.
You are the only participant in this conference. This conference is being recorded. Muted.
Time to Break Free is a listener-sponsored broadcast. If you'd like to help keep this program on the air, go to FromTheTrenchesWorldReport.com and hit that donate button. Or you can mail donations to Henry Shively at Post Office Box 964, Chiloquin, Oregon, 97624. Your contributions are appreciated. Okay, it is 1:40 p.m. Arizona Mountain Time, and I've been having some internet connection issues here. Hopefully I'm on the air. I seem to have the call-in line up. If anybody can hear me on the call-in line, feel free to unmute and come on up. So we've been discussing Ernst Zundel, and we went ahead and played his interview on CNN's Crossfire, where they basically just tried to discredit him, and he did an excellent job holding his own. So I was planning on reading the rest of this hit piece from the New York Times, but I tell you what, you know, it probably doesn't do Zundel any honor. So if you want to go read it, it's at FromTheTrenchesWorldReport.com. So I'm just going to go ahead and read what's on his website. In the address bar, it calls it a bio, but he has it titled as Background of Ernst Zundel's Youth and Early Adulthood. So this was written sometime in the mid-80s, long before Ernst Zundel became a full-time, high-profile political dissident. Since then, Zundel has become world-renowned, but this is how it all began and was written up by a probation officer right after his first great Holocaust trial in 1985 in Toronto, Canada. Okay, Ernst Zundel was born in Kalmbach, Germany, West, on April 24, 1939. The subject's father, now deceased, 1969, was a lumberjack, and his mother was and is a homemaker. Mr. Zundel had four sisters all living in West Germany and a brother who is an attorney in California. He maintains regular contact with his family. Mr. Zundel's father was drafted into the Army shortly after the beginning of World War II, and as a result, the subject saw little of his father as a child. When he returned permanently to the family home in 1947, he was, according to the subject, an alcoholic. Mr. Zundel stated that throughout the war years and thereafter, his mother provided much of the structure and support for the family. Mr. Zundel stated his earliest memories are connected with wartime privations and the early post-war occupation by the French army. The subject attended school in Kalmbach and graduated in 1957 and applied for permission to immigrate to Canada. He stated that he left Germany in 1958 because, as a pacifist, he objected to serving in the German army. Mr. Zundel arrived in Canada in 1958 and quickly found work as a graphic artist in the advertising field. He met his first wife, Janik LaRouche, while attending night school shortly after arriving in Canada. The couple were married in 1959. Mr. Zundel has two children, Pierre and Hans, born in 1960 and 1967, respectively. Pierre is completing his master's degree in forest sciences at the University of Toronto, and the younger son will enter the university this year. Mind you, this was written back in the mid-80s. Mr. Zundel and his wife separated in 1975. According to both parties, the relationship was strained for some years because of the controversy surrounding Mr. Zundel's historical publications. Mrs. Zundel, née LaRouche, stated that the separation was her idea because of her husband's refusal to end what she referred to as his political activities, which she stated resulted in continuous harassment of the family. She was, she said, particularly concerned regarding threats made to her and her children. Ms. LaRouche noted that her husband remains good friends and that he has continued to support and spend a good deal of time with her sons since the separation. She further noted that during their life together, Mr. Zundel was a good husband as well as being a kind and loving father who never attempted to force his views on her or the children. Pierre Zundel described his father as a kind, supportive person who was actively involved with his sons both before and after his parents' separation. He echoed his mother's statements that the subject did not attempt to push his views on the children, but rather attempted to inculcate, on their part, a questioning and critical attitude towards events. Zundel's employment history in Canada was reviewed in the same precedence report in 1985. Mr. Zundel arrived in Canada in 1958 and found immediate employment with the Simpson Sears Limited in the advertising department as a graphic artist. Between 1961 and 1969, the subject lived in Montreal, where he owned a small commercial art studio employing three people. In 1969, the subject returned to Toronto, where he started his own firm, Great Ideas Advertising. Mr. Zundel is presently the sole owner of two incorporated companies, the above Great Ideas Advertising and Samizdat Publishers, which specialize in private publications of political nature. The writer contacted Mr. N. Burnett, who is in capacity as art director for McLean's magazine, employed Mr. Zundel firm on a freelance basis between 1980 and 1983. Mr. Burnett stated that Mr. Zundel is an excellent photo retoucher whose work was always satisfactory. Mr. Barnett noted that his decision to stop using Mr. Zundel's firm was motivated by business considerations unconnected to Mr. Zundel's other publishing activities. Mr. Zundel expressed the feeling that the decision to stop using his firm was a direct result of pressure by groups opposed to his political and historical publications. He also expressed the view that much of the business he has lost in the past 2 years is a result of the organized pressure by groups opposed to his views. At times, Zundel's business employed some 12 people during certain periods in the 1970s. He frequently trained young artists and handicapped people with the help of federal and provincial government programs. Zundel also pursued a career as an artist, producing and selling over 700 watercolors and oil paintings, largely of Canadian themes, while most were produced in Canada. They have been sold to customers as far away as Japan and Europe. Mr. Zundel is also very much involved with an organization called Concerned Parents of German Descent, which is dedicated to fostering in the German-Canadian community a sense of pride and countering the incessant abuse that the subject feels this group is subjected to. Mr. Zundel observed, somewhat ironically, that before his present legal difficulties began, he had planned to move from Toronto, buy a rural property, and semi-retire to a life of farming and painting in Canada. Mr. Zundel is now adamant that his intention is to remain in Canada and continue to struggle, that is, to continue to attack what he considers the anti-German thrust of contemporary historiography. The individual before you, Your Honor, is a 46-year-old man who is appearing, again, this is written sometime in the mid-80s, a 46-year-old man who is appearing before the criminal courts for the first time. He is a successful businessman, well thought of by professional acquaintances and professional friends and personal friends alike. There is little doubt that had Mr. Zundel confined his activities to purely business interests, he would be, if not wealthy, certainly comfortable at this point in his life. It is very clear, however, that Mr. Zundel's primary intellectual interest, perhaps passion or obsession is a better word, is an effort to revive recent history touching on the Holocaust. The subject made it very clear to the writer that he sees this struggle as a matter of right. Indeed, Mr. Zundel's wife stated to the writer that his passion consumed their marriage, and she often felt that she was married to a missionary. Mr. Zundel stated empathetically that he does not consider anything that he has published, nor does he consider himself as an anti-Semitic, rather a pro-German. Mr. Zundel also noted that he views himself as a stabilizing influence within the community. He stated, within the various ethnic community, there are many who share his views, but they are much more prone to react violently to what they see as a historical calumny perpetrated by segments of the Jewish community. Mr. Zundel has made mention on a number of occasions that he is a pacifist. He explained to the writer that his pacifism is regarding military service, but not political pacifism, and that his struggle to present a true picture of the Holocaust will continue. The subject did, however, state clearly to the writer that he is prepared to abide by any conditions Your Honor should set as part of your sentence in this matter. During his 1985 false news trial, I'll repeat, during his 1985 false news trial, Zundel took the stand and gave evidence concerning his childhood and the reasons he had come to Canada. My first recollection is living in a very old house, 370 years old. Later on, I was told that it belonged to my family for all those years. My father was very seldom at the house, and he did come home only on periodic visits because he was a soldier. I had a normal childhood like millions of other kids in the war on all sides of the battles. And when the war ended, towards the end of the war, we suffered the bombing raids and the sirens going off and the frequent wake-up calls from our mother, herding us children, we were five of us at the time, into the basement, air raid shelter, a bunker. The house would shake and rattle, but these hundreds of bombers were streaming towards cities like Dresden and Berlin and so on. And I think the most vivid recollection that I have is the cold, stark terror of the air raid sirens and the droning of these bombers, then the anti-aircraft fire, the searchlights in the sky, Allied planes limping back over the Black Forest area, burning, some crashing. It was, for a little kid, a pretty frightening experience. The neighboring city of Parfusheim, I'm sorry, I can't pronounce that German word, was bombed. 20,000 people were killed in one night, and we, of course, had been once again yanked out of bed, and a firestorm was raging in that town that was 20 kilometers away. We lived in this mountain valley, and there was a terrific howl as if there was a tornado going on, and it was the air being sucked into the town to feed the fires as it was burning, and the sky was red wherever we looked from. Flames as distant as 20 kilometers away. They left an impression on me that I can never forget. And in the post-war period, of course, there was the cold. There was no heat. There was no food. We had to go to a church basement to school because the French army had taken over our schoolhouse. School was on an irregular basis. We didn't have paper to write on. The one thing that I will always remember was hunger, and we broke out in sores all over our skin. Later on, I found out it was nutritional deficiency disease, lack of protein, and so on. It was just basically a horrible time. My father was a prisoner of war. The German government had passed legislation to rearm Germany under the pressure of the United States, and I was absolutely convinced if I had anything to do with it, I would never serve in any man's army, because I believe still that the Germans had killed millions of people, especially Jews, just because they were Jews, and I thought the same generals and the same officers who had been responsible for that were going to be the ones who were building up the new army, which was true in many cases. So I wrote away to various places, and then the colored brochures came and the descriptions of the different countries. I chose Canada. It had no army. It was the only country that had no army. And also, I liked the climate. And it was the deciding point. And so in 1958, I came to Canada, and I haven't regretted it to this day ever having come here. In his schooling in Germany, Zundel was taught from textbooks approved by the Allied occupation forces, which taught a history at variance from what his parents told him. In his 1985 trial testimony, he stated, "I noticed one thing, that in the inside front page of our textbooks in school, there were foreign language things written. Later on, I found out that it meant a kind of censorship approval stamp by the various occupying powers that censored all of our textbooks, even our mathematic books and song books. And I think that this is an indoctrination of what education we children in Germany received after the Second World War." We were the victims of the occupying powers who taught us their version of history, and the result was that we became alienated from our parents. What our parents taught us in their life experience seemed like lies and fairy tales to us because the teachers in the textbooks that we were given were reflecting a totally different reality. This made for many an unhappy home and a kind of tribalism between the younger generation. We were kind of sticking together, and the parents' generation, the older generation, was separated from us. Does that sound familiar, folks? It sure does to me. As we got a little older, naturally, my brothers and sisters would ask questions of our father, who had been in the war, and friends would drop in, and we began to realize that not all was well with history that we were being taught. That in reality, our parents had lived, and we were eyewitness to one version of history, and our school books reflected a totally different version of history. This made me certainly realize that I had to inform myself somewhat independently. The years 1958 to 1979. In 1961, Zundel and his family moved to Montreal, where Zundel started and quickly built, through hard work, his own thriving graphic arts business. His clients included advertising work for some of the larger corporations of Canada, such as Henry Bricks Jewelers, the Hudson Bay Company, and the Reader's Digest of Canada. Zundel formed the Anti-Communist National Defense Committee during the 60s, a speaker's bureau with Sundell as the sole speaker at first. He often had three or four speaking engagements a week, speaking to Kiwanis Club, church groups, etc., on communism, a threat to our civilization. Though his efforts, through his efforts, an anti-Soviet demonstration of 650 supporters took place outside the Montreal Forum. Sundell took an active part in Canadian political campaigns, appeared as a guest on many talk radio shows, lectured in public, and wrote political articles for various German language publications in North America and overseas. He also served as contributing editor and columnist on the campus newspaper for evening students, The Paper, at St. George University in Montreal, when he attended the school during the 1966 to 1968 academic years, taking courses in political science. His regular column, Politics Past, Present, and Future, dealt with such topics as Quebec's separatism. When the Federal Liberal Party Leadership Convention came up in 1968, Sundell ran for the leadership of the Liberal Party on a platform designed to preempt Pierre Trudeau's three wise men from Quebec, all of whom he had watched with alarm for years and whose leftist pronouncements, articles in the Site Libre, and policies for Canada seemed a disaster to him. He tried to articulate the fears and aspirations of the then never heard of immigrants, at that time largely European, as a mediating third force between English and French Canadians. This action annoyed the power brokers of the Liberal Party and brought him disfavor at the highest levels of the ruling Liberal government. And we're almost at the bottom of the article, but I'm not going to really have time to continue. I had some internet connection issues today, and I apologize, folks. It's going to happen periodically until I get to my next location and get a hardline internet connection. But I tell you what, we're always going to be recording, and I'm always going to make sure that I get the archive up in its entirety. So, again, I appreciate everybody listening. I apologize for the connection issues that we had. I know the call-in line is probably not even up right now. But we're going to be right back on the ball tomorrow. Hopefully the internet connection will be good, and I have another entertaining show for you guys. All right, you guys enjoy the rest of your evening. Take care.